With global government, business, and thought leaders headed to the Swiss Alps for the big winter conference next week, the Davos organizers have drawn up a list of things they think they should think about on the plane ride in. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The people who produce the big Davos conference, which President Trump will be attending next week in Switzerland, have a new report on global threats, from stock market crashes to growing inequality to little bits of computer intelligence that could infect us. The new report makes for unsettling reading. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, has been reading through the World Economic Forum's Pandora's Box today. Anu?
The report says that the world is getting back on track from the financial crisis a decade ago, but it says that those headlines are obscuring some real threats. For example, unsustainable asset prices, inequality, we know about that one, especially in advanced economies. And for the first time, this one's interesting, the global gender parity gap in things like health, education, and the workplace has widened for the first time since 2006. So lots of different inequalities.
All right, global things to worry about. How about the globe? The report says planet on the brink.
Yeah, the environment forms a huge part of the risks outlined in this report. Things like extreme temperatures, which have been seen on nearly every continent, floods and storms. But it also looks at much broader trends like biodiversity loss. It's now occurring at mass extinction rates. And the report is warning that this is really going to have implications for global food stocks.
Now, some of this implies the future, but what about future shocks that we're not worrying about enough? Even, I was just looking at the table of contents here, even the table of contents is enough to keep a person up at night.
It's terrifying. I mean, just to give you a flavor of future shocks, the report talks about war without rules, trade under threat, democracy under threat, and digital risks is also a big one. For example, cybersecurity and other threats to the internet. Angus Collins is lead author of the report. He's been telling me a little bit more about those risks.
So we have things like the breakup of the internet into national or regional, effectively walled gardens. We have another internet-related one about what we're calling AI weeds, which is low-level AI that it could just slowly choke away the internet.
You know, we think that artificial intelligence is just going to make everything better, but he's warning that snippets of algorithm could actually end up clogging the internet and slowing absolutely everything down. We might spend more of our time getting rid of those weeds and actually benefiting from artificial intelligence. The messages from this report are certainly going to be front and center for all these world leaders at Davos when it starts on Monday.
My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand in London. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
Let's check the financial markets here. U.S. stock index futures are up 0.4% for the S&P and NASDAQ futures. The FTSE in London is down 0.2%. Two quite different questions. What will and what should folks in Washington push for economic policies? We enter President Trump's year two. Yesterday, we talked to the head of the liberal-leaning Roosevelt Institute about Democrats. Today, what will and should Republicans do for economic policy now that the tax overhaul is U.S. law? Michael Boskin supported that tax overhaul, arguing it will grow the economy. He was chair of the first President Bush's Council of Economic Advisors. He's now a senior fellow at the conservative-leaning Hoover Institution and a professor of economics at Stanford. Boskin's economic policy list starts with the reality that America is becoming a land of more retirees and fewer working-age people.
The important thing is to increase the economy's potential to produce. Productivity has been lagging very badly. And, of course, the demographic effects on the labor force growth are important. And that's one reason the economy is unlikely to grow as rapidly over the next 20 years as it has since World War II, unless we have a very different immigration policy.
A very different immigration policy. In which way should it shift, in your view?
Two ways, but our labor force is growing slowly. It's not a big issue now, but as more and more baby boomers retire, we're going to need more workers of many different skill levels, particularly highly skilled. That starts with the Stanford and Harvard and MIT PhDs from foreign countries who we ought to have stay here and be productive here rather than go back to their home countries. But it's not just that high a skill level. There are many, many millions of unfilled jobs in the United States. And we need to do a better job of training our own workers, for those from lathe operators and tool and die operators. But eventually, we're going to have too few workers for our economy if the demography pans out as people are projecting. So I'm not in favor of eliminating the family reunification stuff, but I think a better balance to have more merit-based. I think there's broad support for in the country and in the Congress, despite the current back and forth between the extremes of both parties.
Now, on a different subject, there have been some noises from the conservative side about reforming what people like to call entitlements, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Speaker Paul Ryan mentioned it. There was some reporting that the White House said, please wait until the second Trump term for that, because it's politically, what do we say, nettlesome. What do you think?
It absolutely has to be done. And the tactics on what is the best timing for it was most likely to succeed is an interesting question. There are people who believe that you can't get anything really constructive done until we're on the precipice of a crisis. The checks would have to be reduced or a large tax increase occur. My list of reforms would include raising benefits at the very bottom while slowing the growth for the middle class, upper middle class, and higher income people. So the longer we wait, the closer the precipice will be, the greater the pressure to reform, but the more disruptive a reform will be.
Michael Boskin, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, a professor of econ at Stanford. He served as chairman of the first President Bush's Council of Economic Advisors. Professor, thank you.
Well, thank you, David. It was really terrific.
The longer director's cut of that interview, including Boskin's argument that the U.S. military is dangerously short of money, is at marketplace.org. Also, the companion interview from yesterday with Felicia Wong of the Roosevelt Institute is also there. Economic agendas for Democrats and Republicans in year two of the Trump presidency. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.